From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cromery. If they were lucky, Juneau residents wandering the Barrens neighborhood may have stumbled upon something magic last week. Every year, a fairy forest pops up by Evergreen Avenue just for a little while. We visited the whimsical spot before it disappeared.
Hi, what's your favorite part?
Well, you already went up here.
You already went up here?
You're still coming up.
This year, visitors to the forest first saw a fairy toll box that says, "Fairies do not use money. Leave your piggy bank at home," accompanied by a list of acceptable toll offerings like shells, drawings, and feathers. Then, down a long winding path, little houses, villages, and creatures appear in the forest. A giant jellyfish made of scrap fabric and a trash can lid hangs to the side of the path. These designs are all the handiwork of Sarah Nico, a University of Alaska Southeast professor of behavioral health. She was inspired to make a fairy forest when she bought her house. She says she already had an idea to build one, but something cemented that decision only a few days after she moved in.
And I hear this little voice outside by the pond, and it says, "This is where the fairies live." And I peek out my window, and it's my neighbor and their little friend. And I looked at my husband, and I'm like, "We're doing that fairy forest, and I'm doing it big."
That voice came from Lily Race. As Nico started building the forest to debut for a few days each year, Race quickly became involved, recommending additions of what she thought was missing.
And you'll say, "I think they need a theater." And so we create a theater.
And then we create a post office.
And then we create a post office, right? Because how are they going to mail their letters out?
They wrote a little book about the forest together, following the story of a fairy named Petal who came to the forest from a mythical land far away.
Once upon a time, there was a fairy named Petal. She lived in a land called Avalor, where the sun never took a nap. When she was just a sweet fairy, no longer than a gumdrop, her Nana and Pops told her the land of Juneau was, this was a magical land where stars twinkled when the sun went to sleep.
All of this began 5 years ago. Race is 9 years old now, and she and Nico still work together on the design every year.
What things do you think that the fairy forest still needs that we don't have yet?
I don't think we have a school.
I think Fender has a high school, maybe an elementary school.
Can we get a kindergarten?
A kindergarten. Yeah, of course.
And then maybe a dog walking thing.
Like a dog walking service? Maybe a gnome with walking a bunch of dogs? I like that idea.
Sometimes Nico will add to it on the fly, based on comments she hears from visitors.
Just this morning, I heard a little kid yesterday go, "Oh, there's the school. Where's the teacher?" I'm like, "Oh." So I made a little like UAS graduation gnome this morning just to put there.
She made scenes dedicated to the couple she bought the house from, like Mark's Park. The park is fenced in with stepping stones and a gnome with its own Pepsi.
He's 90 now, and so I do owe a lot of just gratitude for them for being caretakers of this land for 50 years.
Some of the houses have laundry lines, furniture, and fairies and gnomes living in them. Ray said her favorite is the cat house, complete with mini boxes of litter. Nico says she saves household trash to turn into buildings and furniture for the forest.
And so everything I try to use is recycled. So these pieces, they're number 5 plastic, and you can't recycle them. And so I decided, well, I'm just going to make houses and things out of them so that they don't go in the landfill.
When her water filter broke, she turned it into a bright red house. She said a wall of her basement is completely full of all the fairy garden stuff she's made over the years. And it takes her 16 hours to set it up. The reactions she gets from the community make it all worth it.
Yeah, so the children just have a place to come and explore. I love sitting up there and listening to them, like the oohs and the ahs and just hearing the fun and play. Because it's just not often that kids get to do these kind of like just fun little things and make memories, you know.
The forest has been taken down for the year. But Nico says to stay tuned to see when it pops up again next summer. She doesn't like to advertise it, though.
I think there's just something special about when is the fairy forest going to happen. It kind of adds to the mystique.
One hint, it'll be a sunny week when she sets it all up again. On Tuesday night, the Haynesboro Assembly discussed what restrictions to put on the Campbell Heliport, located 26 miles from town. In a now familiar scenario, a string of residents pleaded with local government to protect their neighborhood from excessive noise. As KHNS's Alonda Premenil reports, the assembly put some restrictions in place, but these may not satisfy the neighbors.
The Hainsborough Assembly discussed the heliport issue for over 3 hours at their meeting. It started with a presentation by residents appealing the borough's decision to issue a heliport permit to the Campbells. The couple want to continue flights from their property. Appellant Jessica Plachta cited a new analysis of the impact of noise.
And it particularly drew out the effect of dramatic fluctuations in noise levels as being exceptionally harmful. Risk of dying from a heart attack starting at just 35 decibels increases by 4.3% for every 10 decibels. That's a measurable health effect on us.
Nicholas Satkowski talked of diminished property values for the neighborhood.
Value does not equate to money. There are many kinds of value that all of us recognize. We all can understand friendship. Many other things have value that are just not equatable with money. So if you can't have quiet use and enjoyment on your property, that is a diminishment of value.
Mayor Doug Olrud reminded the appellants that the meeting was focused exclusively on placing restrictions on the existing permit, and that protesting the permit's existence altogether may not be useful. John Kaponik also spoke against the heliport. He said he has over 50 years of experience in aviation.
I'm a commercial helicopter pilot. I've worked in maintenance, but I didn't move 2,500 miles to listen to a damn helicopter. I wear hearing aids because of them, and I have helicopters flying over my property close enough that I could take a rock and hit it.
Nick Jans said the borough has double standards when it comes to permitting.
I just don't understand how chickens can be illegal within the city limits here, but it's fine to stick that thing out there in the middle of a neighborhood. And it seems to be that because we live out there, we're not on the same plane, that we don't deserve peaceful enjoyment of our neighborhood.
The property owner, George Campbell, defended his right to bring aircraft to his property.
A lot of us moved out there to do the fun stuff. We want to be able to shoot our guns. We want to be able to drive our dump trucks, use our excavators.
He said so far he has been allowing few flights from his property, but that going through the permitting process could push him to increase traffic.
My neighbors complained. The borough then made the decision that routine commercial would be even one helicopter landing. Well, this set off this firestorm that we've got now. Now I've got time and money invested in this. Am I going to just do six landings a year? I don't know. But if I'm going to have to go through this kind of effort, I want to do routine flying.
Many residents wanted to know why this permit was issued when comparable ones had not. Assembly member Gabe Thomas explained his reasoning. He said the Campbell airstrip has increased the noise levels in the neighborhood since previous heliports were rejected based on excessive noise.
Noise studies were done in 2015. AerCap Park came in after. So how are these noise studies, how are they even valid at that point? You know, like you just said, the noise characteristics have changed since that airport had been put in. In 24 Mile, it doesn't have an airport right next to it.
The assembly proceeded with the discussion of flight restrictions. After some back and forth, with assembly member Deborah Schnabel proposing to revoke the permit and assembly member Jerry Lapp proposing to permit 24 flight days, the assembly voted to restrict flights to 12 days per year, with no more than 3 consecutive days, and 5 days between helicopter events. Hours of operation for taxi landings are limited, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. The Campbells can apply for 3 extra days to the Planning Commission. Their permit will be reviewed in a year, with a public hearing in front of the Planning Commission to hear the neighbors' experience. The Campbells will have to report on the dates and types of use at the heliport. Residents expressed some skepticism. They pointed to the lack of enforcement in the past. Erica Merklin spoke about her experience as a neighbor trying to get the borough to act on her complaints.
It's taken a lot of my own personal time. I've been ignored for months and had to spend time doing a public records request to see what actually was going on with multiple violations that had been reported to the borough.
Marvin Willard Jr. doubted the self-reporting would be effective.
I'm just concerned why they're allowing someone who's on their watch to make his own assessment. He's just going to tell you guys what you want to hear.
Many residents have brought up the possibility of suing the borough if the heliport is approved. For KHNS, I'm Alan DePriminale.
This is KTIY.